From the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, this is Deconstructing Dinner.
And welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly one-hour radio show and podcast produced at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia. I'm John Steinman. On today's broadcast, we take you into part three of the Backyard Chickens series that has been airing here on the show since March of this year, 2008. The series has aired as a sub-series of the Farming in the City episodes that explore the world of urban agriculture. It's a timely subject to cover here on the show in light of both our recently launched Livestock Lost series, as well as the recent nationwide listeriosis tragedy that has, as of August 29th, 2008, taken the lives of 9 people that are confirmed. 6 more have also possibly been attributed to the tainted meat produced by Maple Leaf Foods. Of course, raising one's own food in one's own backyard is a far less risky way of sourcing food, and the prospects of backyard chickening are understandably growing in popularity. Joining the show once again will be Boise, Idaho's Bucky Bacaw and his backyard chicken broadcast. And we'll also revisit with Christoph Martens, a Nelson backyard chickener who guided 2 rookie backyard chickeners through their first backyard chicken slaughter. We'll listen in on a recording of that on today's show. We've been receiving quite the steady stream of emails and comments from listeners who were, just as we were, shocked at how timely our recent livestock series was here on the show. For those who did not catch part one of the series in particular, it was then on our July 3rd broadcast when we heard from Toronto's Susan Bourret, author of the book Carnivore Chic. Susan had gone undercover at Maple Leaf Foods' Brandon, Manitoba slaughterhouse. She did this as research for an article, and it was there that she learned of the deplorable and risky conditions in which the meat of Canadians is produced. That interview helped launch our series into an analysis of how one region in particular is working towards creating a more localized, safer, and responsible supply of meat. Weaving its way through the series has been many recordings and information on the never-ending stream of meat recalls that have occurred throughout North America over the past 10 years. It was suggested that such recalls will only continue as the North American meat sector becomes as industrialized as it has become today. And of course, as most North Americans are now aware, it was on August 17th, only 2 weeks after Part 3 of the Livestock Lost series aired, that Maple Leaf Foods announced a major recall of their products from Canadian grocery store shelves. The issue was listeriosis contamination, and since then there have been 9 confirmed deaths, 6 more that may be attributed to the contamination, and a possible 64 illnesses. It's been suggested here on the show before that one of the most dangerous positions we here in North America could fall into is the normalizing of this incident. Indeed, there has been much that has been normalized in our society, from obesity to diabetes to depression and heart disease. It almost seems as though such crises have become the accepted cost of convenience. Well, sure enough, Canada's Minister of Health came out with his own brand of normalizing by stressing throughout most of his media interviews that this incident is an opportunity to applaud Canada's Food Inspection Agency for having recalled the meat before anyone else became ill and or died. One may even go so far as to predict that if 300 people had lost their lives, Minister of Health Tony Clement would be there in front of the cameras applauding the CFIA for preventing the number from perhaps reaching 1,000. Contrary to his assurances, new products continue to be recalled almost 2 weeks after the initial outbreak. So it seems rather clear that our political leaders are not the ones to be looking to for solutions and alternatives to the risks facing our food supply. Christoph Martens is, on the other hand, one of those people to look to. Christoph lent his voice to part one of our Backyard Chickens series in March of this year. Living in the city of Nelson, Christoph has been for quite some time defying a municipal bylaw that prohibits the harboring of poultry within city limits. Christoph has since inspired a number of Nelson residents to become backyard chickeners themselves. And as this backyard series evolves, we'll hear more from others both here in Nelson and abroad who have too begun to raise urban chickens. And I did have the opportunity to revisit with Christoph as he guided 2 rookie urban chickeners, Steve and Hazel, through the process of slaughtering their own birds for dinner. As part of the process, Steve learned that raising and slaughtering one's own birds is a simple process that is void of almost any trauma to the birds themselves. In the industrial barns raising North America's chickens, many of the birds never encounter a human being until that final moment of slaughter. Of course, this creates for a very traumatic experience for the bird. In the case of backyard chickens, they're around and handled by humans from birth. And as a result, holding the bird prior to slaughter is a far more calming experience for the bird itself. With the exception of a few moments of dead air, this next segment is an unedited recording of Steve and Hazel's first backyard chicken slaughter, guided by the experienced Christoph Martins. I will warn listeners, though, that if the sound of chickens losing their heads is offensive to you, you may wish to not listen for the next 15 minutes. Set up just outside Christoph's coop was a stump with two nails. The nails help keep the chicken's head in place, and sitting beside the stump was a hatchet.
I think that's our new one.
That's your new one?
That one that I just brought.
Okay.
That's the noise he's making.
The nice thing about doing this at home is you can calm them down, which is really nice. Like in the, and even certified organic, like it's a factory assembly line, and they're freaking out. So it's really nice just to get them calmed down.
Can you tell just by holding him whether he's calm?
Yeah. No, he is, and they tend to when they feel secure, they tend to just calm right down. Yeah. And he's used to being around people too, which is nice. So you want to take their wings, spread them out.
Oh, like that.
And then spread their feet out, and then you spread the other wing out. This one's easier because it's got a flight feather.
Yeah.
But it's not essential. But it's basically you're straightening their arm, and then you just.
With one hand, okay.
One hand, and it's just.
So you've got both legs and both wings in your hand?
Yep.
Wow, it's so calm.
So you just got it stretched out. And that's it.
Wow. Wow, it's squirting. Wow, look at that. It's so weird to see it.
That was much less messy than I expected. That is so elegant.
It was so calm, like right till even when he put his head down and everything.
So, at this point, you just want to hold them until they stop struggling. At a certain point, you just put them on their back.
You don't have a special bucket for them or anything?
Some people will have, like if you're doing a lot, it's nice to have cones.
Yeah.
And then you just put them in the cone, and then they can drip, and they won't struggle. But you don't want to let them go until they stop struggling, because they will start flopping around. So, that's that.
So that didn't take that long,
that didn't take long at all.
Do you want to do one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, do you want to get everything out of there so the next one doesn't see anything? Like, do they freak out if they see?
No.
Okay.
No, they're not that pretty.
They're not that pretty.
Okay.
Amazing.
Okay, so who's going to lose their head next? Hi, kitty.
Someone told me that there was blood everywhere.
Yeah, and the birds don't really breathe that much.
So you're saying you want to wait with the Cornish?
Yeah, let's let the Cornish get a bit bigger.
There's a gray
one.
Yeah, the hawk. This one here. That one. That one there?
That little one?
It's not very big.
Yeah, no, it's not very big.
So we could choose.
There's a really big one in here, a big Americana.
Is that the hawk one? Yeah.
No, he's
that was who I was thinking.
Gray okay. And orange.
How do we get him?
Let's see if I can fit him out of there. Okay.
All right.
This guy here, right? That one right there?
Yeah. That's how big our Polish got.
Okay. I started peeling out some of these tomatoes. That's a big one. That's the one we should do actually.
Okay, yeah, let's leave this one because it's
so a hen. So we're going to need a few more, right?
But this one might be a hen too because it doesn't have a coxcomb.
Oh.
So maybe we should leave the hens.
Yeah, I think we should leave that one. It might be him.
Hey, beauty.
This one's a nice one. You can see this one is really starting to get the rooster tail and everything.
Is that your biggest Americana?
Yeah, I think so.
Hi, pretty.
So I think if you do that one and then your leghorn, I think we'll be good for today.
So you think the leghorn should go?
Well, he's the one that we know.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. You might have to explain this to me again, but I start by grabbing the wing out, pulling it back, capturing it with the foot like that, and then
same with the other side. So you want
to right back,
stretch that guy, stretch there, hold that.
Oh, okay, got it.
And then use your other hand to pull the other one back.
And now I should be able to take all of that together.
Did you?
Oh, I lost it. No, did I? Is that good? Got it? Is that right? Oh, that's the one.
So, why don't you hold your hand there?
Oh, I can't.
Well, you'll get better.
Okay.
It's just pretty important just because on that you want both of their feet.
Oh, I don't notice that. You want it to be a really nice position that he can't get out of. Like, and you want him to feel really secure.
I got you. I've got you.
Okay, hello.
You can stretch it out just a little bit.
Okay. Oh, sorry, guy. No.
I just want to pull that.
Oh shit! Sorry.
Yeah, it's good to
I hit
make
my nail.
Sure. Yeah, and then just pull him out to make sure that he's separate.
Okay.
Otherwise, you never know.
It was finicky getting a hold of all that stuff. I think it was because I was being too delicate with him. I wasn't picturing he could really kind of reach his wings back and hold them.
Yeah.
They're not like that delicate.
Yeah, it's good to be firm but gentle.
Yeah.
That was really good for your first one.
I wish I hadn't hit the nail though. That sucks.
You want to do the last one? Or?
Sure.
Okay.
Should I jack that nail up, maybe?
I'll fix that. You can get the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, right there.
You might want to close that top gate there, because they'll fly out.
This one or up there?
The top door, yeah.
You're at the top of the gate? Okay.
Okay.
Right back.
Stretch it right back. Use both hands.
Right back. There we go. Get that one. That one's harder because it's clipped. That feels good. I think I got him. Don't I? I got him?
That's good.
You want to grab the wing because he's going to start flapping.
Wow.
Clockwork. Yeah, it's important to keep holding. Otherwise, you'll get blood on yourself. So I'm going to get the water out.
How come so much of the neck ends up exposed like that?
I think because you stretch them out and then the skin
kind
of recedes.
All right.
Actually, we should maybe do them here, so I'll bring the water up here.
You did a really good job. Didn't
you? That one was nice and clean. Good. Smell better.
Okay.
then?
It's interesting because we've been with that chicken for a long time. Do you notice that last guy, the leghorn?
I don't know. I have like a very specific view of death, so I just see that.
What's that?
What's what?
What do you see?
Just that, like, I have a very particular view of what death means, and that's what I experience.
Okay, start plucking.
So I just start yanking feathers off?
Yep.
Now it's hot.
And do it into this bucket here.
So the water is to just loosen them a bit, or?
Yeah, I guess it separates, or it makes the...
Wow, it really works.
Yeah, just...
Wow.
They come right off.
Yep. It has to be boiling?
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be pretty hot.
I think we were playing with this chicken yesterday.
Oh. I didn't need to clip his wings, I guess, huh?
No. It's so soft, their feathers.
Having done the Buddhist practice for so long, I have this real sort of sense of how whatever the silence that is death, the nothing that is death is the nothing that underlies all of our experience all the time. You know, mm-hmm. It's always there. Mm-hmm. We don't usually listen to it, and so you know you can just have this sense of, like you say, the silence, like the bird. It's like it went somewhere. Where did it go? Mm-hmm. It went to silence, nothing. Mm-hmm.
I love these little guys. They're just as cute without fur as all their wings.
Notice the different colorations on the skin.
Oh, yeah. Look at you. I have the leghorn. What do you have? You have an Americana?
This was the, Americana.
So they're pretty small. Why is it you wouldn't let them get larger? Do they not get much larger than this, these breeds?
Well, they'll get more than double, probably. It's just that's sort of the intention is... You get more birds than you can handle, and then you do some of them earlier, mm-hmm. some later. Like what they call a Cornish hen in the supermarket is actually just a young broiler. It's a broiler that's this age. The thing about these chickens is they're miniature chickens, and they're also heritage chickens. So they bear very little relation to the commercial chicken that we eat. Mm-hmm. Americana is an American bred chicken, about 100 years old, and it lays green and blue eggs. It's descended actually from Central American chickens, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they won't get much bigger. They're not really meat birds, but, I mean, until the advent of hybridized commercial chickens, mm-hmm. birds were not meaty as we know them. That's just sort of a genetic thing that they do, where they have two very specific lines of... What is it? Plymouth Rock and Cornish. And they've bred them very specifically. And then when they cross them, they create a super chicken. So...
But they're still bigger than bantams, right? Even like
but they're standard-sized chickens.
Those are standard-sized chickens.
But they say that bantams are closer to the original size that a chicken would
probably
have.
Yeah.
Oh, these are such cool animals. I love these guys. It's like, because birds are so precious, like, you never get to hold a bird, you know? Like, this is the closest I'll... Even when I hold my chickens, I don't get to look at their feet up close like this. What, you don't feel that way, Christoph? You're really used to chickens.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit more...
Jaded.
Desensitized.
I'm amazed at how not traumatic that seemed for them. Like, they really just did not... seem to care, like,
yeah. Well, like, if you do it properly, down. It's fine.
Yeah, I was, because people would tell me how bloody it was, how much blood would come out.
Oh,
and it looks seem
well, ready. Want me to?
I think so.
This one has a lot of pin feathers. That are hard
how
to
did
get
you
out.
Get yours so clean? Did you just rub them?
Yeah,
they're all different. I think in terms of how.
Yeah, mine's really neat.
Look at that one.
And that's, you said that's the one that we brought?
Yeah, this is our leghorn.
Our leghorn, yeah.
Yeah, he's not bad. It's interesting how different the coloration is.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's from what they've been eating. Or what?
with their heads?
Should I stick the head in?
Just put it in the bucket and we'll put it in the compost.
Okay.
Yeah, this one was not so good. Just keep doing that one in the house and we can start on the other ones.
So,
all heads in there?
Yeah, all three. Did he say do this in the house? Did you say do this in the house?
Yeah, we'll finish that one in the house.
Where will I put its pin feathers? Where will I put its feathers when I pull them out?
Just in the sink.
In the sink? Okay.
And this is Deconstructing Dinner in part 3 of our Backyard Chickens series. You've been listening to a mostly unedited recording of an urban backyard chicken slaughter that took place in Nelson, British Columbia. Participating in the slaughter for their first time were rookie urban backyard chickeners Steve and Hazel, who were both guided by the experienced Christoph Martins, whom we heard from on part 1 of the series. Ending off the recording there, you heard the process of plucking the chickens of their feathers, which was assisted by the dunking of the chickens in boiling hot water. At this point of the evening, the three chickens were then brought indoors and into the kitchen, where a lesson on gutting took place. And this was, of course, preceded by some cooking and some much-awaited eating.
Yeah, it felt totally fine. It just felt so not traumatic for them that it was not at all traumatic for me. That was my chicken. I knew it was going to happen to him.
That's just a side dish that I'm making.
This is spelberries with pesto.
A lot of pesto.
Is that too much pesto, do you think? I don't know.
Is it powerful?
Yeah.
Thanks for getting it. So when you kill a full-sized chicken, can you still do that thing where you pull their wings down their legs, et cetera, or are they still small enough to...
When you do what? Full-sized chicken?
A full-sized chicken. Can you still do that hold?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's a good way just to hold chickens in general if you want to make sure they feel safe. And
you're going to let me do one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So...
Oh, are you cutting them now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This one's for vegetables. Okay. So you just do a slit on either side,
okay.
And then you crack it open. You use the legs as leverage. The first thing you want to do...
Cut the feet off.
Cut the feet off.
What are they?
What's that?
What do they become?
Some people peel this layer off.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you boil them...
It's supposed to be really high in silicon.
Did you want to try it?
Yeah.
It's just that these feet are so tiny they're not going to have much, but I can't see why not.
Okay.
Hazel's going to eat chicken feet.
Then you have to peel off the toenails.
Okay.
And so it's perfectly
sterile. Yeah, that looks great.
And all this, the thing's coming apart so easily in terms of the peeling the feet and all that, that's all because it just got dipped in that boiling water?
Yeah, I did a pretty good job of dipping them.
Yeah, I guess.
But they almost seemed like they were in the water for a second.
You don't want them in there very long.
That's amazing.
Because, their skin can start coming off.
You have such hands of competence, like you've done it a million years.
I've done it a lot. So this knife is not nearly sharp enough. But.
So now you're coming in...
What were you looking for? How did you know the point to go in there?
Just under this bone here.
Okay.
You want to do a little slit. And then you just go in there. And then you just use this, put your finger in there.
Yeah.
And your finger there, and just crack it open.
Wow.
And then...
And this is the same with the big chicken?
Oh, yeah. It's easier with the big chicken because it's bigger. So then you want to pull this whole...
Wow.
...section out.
And
then, so you just peel it all out, and then ideally you have a really good knife, and then you just cut around the anus.
So that whole thing comes loose.
So that whole thing comes out, and so basically the entire intestine comes out as a unit.
So there was nothing about bleeding it, eh? Like, it was enough to just hold it there for a sec while it...
Yeah, we let it.
That was it, eh?
And then parts that's edible inside that people don't really know about. Obviously the liver. It's nice when you raise your own animals to eat the inside parts.
Yes, what is that?
This is the gizzard. So this is where the chicrit comes in.
Right.
And they fill this with grit, and it just... The food comes through it and gets ground up, and then comes out the other end all ground up. I'm never very good at this part, but there is a way of opening this up.
And that's the liver there?
That's the liver.
I don't make complicated inside. Where's the heart and all that? That's the liver.
Heart's there, yeah. I think they must be less complicated than a mammal. They don't have much for lungs either. So you do a little slit and you kind of get open.
Whatever someone's making smells delicious.
I guess these herbs in this pan are...
Yeah, there's a few things going on here.
Yeah, it's not basil, gizzard dough, I'm sure.
Yeah, rosemary. So, and then you peel this layer off. And hopefully it just comes right off.
And why do you want to... Why do you want the gizzard? Is it just good meat?
It's yummy. Yeah. I like it.
That's like giblets. Isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
You don't even know what those are. Are you going to eat them?
You
said
kidneys.
Mm. I didn't
know. Chicken, so I don't think so. I don't think it's chicken.
And then usually you cut this little flap. And that's it. And so
now I used to quail.
You can do that as one piece.
Okay.
Quails are tiny. Yeah, they're about that size.
This usually gets cut
out. Okay. And did you ever cook it?
And what else can we do that? Maybe greens.
Oh, right. It's not even on, right?
Oh, it's on a little bit. You want it more?
Here's the left.
Man, they're so tiny. So hard to see what you're doing.
This is about the size of a pigeon.
Oh yeah, you used to bring up pigeons.
Just eat pigeons.
Oh, I was gonna put some mustard on these.
Okay. Let's see if I can do it.
You wanna do the next one?
Yeah.
Maybe rinse that board before you do though.
So, first I'm going to cut, so first we cut into the side of the legs, like that.
Okay.
And then you go to this bone here.
Yeah.
And you cut underneath it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where's he going there?
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay,
so
you want to make
I've
sure
done the legs,
go.
And I've cut them here.
Okay.
Now what do? I pop, I pull that
put
back.
Put your finger here.
Put my finger here.
And the finger there, and then crack it open.
But make sure you don't burst anything.
Yeah, you don't want to burst anything.
So like that? Oop.
Maybe,
Ew, a poo came out.
Yeah. Some people will...
Your phones are officially very...
What did I do wrong?
I just...
Cut a little
further
on
the side.
Okay. I just use the other phone.
So now this garbage guts all comes out.
Yeah, it's really tough.
How come it's not just sort of popping out the way it did when you did it? Were you just a little more?
Yeah, I'm more aggressive. Yeah. You just take the whole bunch and pull.
Take the whole bunch. It feels so well attached. It feels like it'll just get all blown up if I pull.
Just pull that to me.
Yep.
Oh, there we go. Oh.
What happened?
Something broke. This broke. This what? Didn't come out.
What's that? Just pull it.
It broke on this point.
Did you get wine in there, Christoph?
Yeah.
Oh, you're
going to
do that later?
Okay, let me show you. So now this stuff should still come out, right? Like, what makes it... Okay, there we go. When he did it, it was just like, pop... Okay, here we go. So now I can cut around the anus.
Let's see.
Around that little... I can't believe you're making us butcher our first chicken.
Okay, now do this side.
Okay, now this was supposed to come out, right? Because this came out when you did it.
It doesn't always come out. It's not a big deal.
No, what is it?
It's just the windpipe.
I'm so proud of us. Like, this has gone so
God,
well.
Damn. Come on, just bust it again.
So let's see what happens. Yeah, then we just gotta go. Let's see, with mine, the crop came all with it. With yours, you're gonna take it from this side.
Okay.
And that's all the food that he ate today. And that's it. So now you can cut it up into pieces.
But what about all this stuff? There's still organs, right?
You can pull some of that. You can leave the heart.
Look at that, the heart. Aww. I usually eat the heart. Oh, and then you got to cut the feet off, too.
And this here. This is some.
And this is Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly one-hour radio show and podcast produced at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia. I'm John Steinman. You've been listening to part 3 of our Backyard Chickens mini-series, which marks part 5 of the Farming in the City series. More information and archived broadcasts can be found on our website at deconstructingdinner.ca. That last segment was the second and final recording from the Urban Backyard Chicken Slaughter recorded in July of 2008 in Nelson, British Columbia. Both Steve and Hazel are new backyard chickeners who represent a growing population of people defying municipal bylaws, ones that prohibit the raising of poultry in urban backyards. But there are nevertheless more North American cities than not that do allow poultry to be raised in backyards. All it takes is a simple phone call to your municipality to find out if they are indeed allowed. And we'll check in with Steve and Hazel on a future broadcast of Deconstructing Dinner to see how their new backyard chickens are doing. But now let's move on to a familiar voice as part of our Backyard Chickens series, and that's Bucky Bacaw, a unique character, backyard chickener, and radio show host from Boise, Idaho. Bucky hosts Bucky Bacaw's Backyard Chicken broadcast from Radio Boise, and his segments are heard on a handful of community radio stations throughout the United States, and now, of course, through Deconstructing Dinner. While some backyard chickeners raise their chickens for meat production, some for fertilizer production, perhaps insect control, or maybe all of the above, eggs are, of course, a significant and plentiful food source that backyard chickens can provide. And so in this next segment, Bucky compares the eggs that most North Americans consume with those that can be found in relatively steady supply in one's own backyard.
Bucky Bacaw here with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. As you probably already know, if you've heard my previous shows, I have an agenda. The redistribution of chickens from densely populated factory farms, which are inhumane and dangerous to public health, to a few in every yard, including suburban and urban homes. There's many reasons to keep chickens in your backyard: bug control, garden fertilization, and companionship, because chickens are as friendly and entertaining as any animal a person might consider a pet. But the first thing that comes to most people's mind is having fresh eggs for breakfast and other meals. And with good reason. Nearly every backyard chickener is passionate about their radically fresh, nutritious, and delicious true free-range eggs. I know I am. Eggs are an excellent source of protein and of vitamins A, E, D, B12, carotenoids, the stuff that pigments vegetables like carrots and prevents eye disease, folates, which help prevent birth defects and heart disease, and omega-3 fatty acids, which are known to be good for the heart. Omega-3 is the main reason mainstream nutritionists are always telling you to eat fish, despite the sad fact that every fish in the world is now laced with mercury. Because of the fat in egg yolk, these nutrients are absorbed easily, and while that fat content is high, about 5 grams in a large egg, 70% of it is unsaturated, which nowadays we know is the good or okay fat. However, don't throw caution to the wind. Roughly a quarter of the population is genetically inclined to high cholesterol risk and have to watch their intake, eggs being notoriously high in cholesterol. As far as the nutrition of eggs is concerned, I'm in total agreement with the corporate-controlled egg commissions and industry councils, except the eggs they're selling are barely worthy of the name egg. I buck the industry spin when I tell you that free-range chickens are more nutritious for you and contain half the cholesterol of supermarket eggs. That's been the folk wisdom of backyard chickeners all along, but a few years ago, the editors of Mother Earth News, who are avid chicken people, sent their flock's eggs to a laboratory and found they contained only about half as much cholesterol, were up to twice as rich in vitamin E, and were 2 to 6 times richer in beta-carotene. The free-range eggs averaged 4 times more than factory eggs. Mother Earth News also unearthed studies by universities and egg industry types, finding the same thing: more vitamins, less cholesterol, and more cholesterol-fighting omega-3s. Studies that not so mysteriously didn't get a lot of attention. You can check the article out yourself on the internet, by following the link on the Bucky page at sagebrushvariety.org. That's not the only flaw in factory eggs. As I've mentioned on previous shows, all factory farms feed their chickens antibiotics, and the vast majority use growth hormones. Supposedly, drug transfer, drugs getting into the eggs, can be avoided by timed application, but chickens are not machine units, even though factory farms treat them like machines. And chicken metabolisms vary from individual to individual. Furthermore, in a factory where profits are minimized by having as few employees as possible managing massive numbers of chickens, it's unrealistic to meet precise injection schedules. Those are at least two reasons why study after study shows that drugs fed to hens are absorbed into the eggs they lay and wind up in the consumer's bloodstream. The growth hormones will wreak havoc on your own body chemistry, and antibiotics, for whatever benefits they may have when used properly, are ineffective when the average person is already constantly exposed through their food. Finally, when you know chickens like I do, and know how charming and intelligent they can be, you won't be willing to support an industry that raises chickens in tiny spaces, burns off their beaks, feeds them garbage, and is always coming up with new ways to raise the profit margin with the side effect of ever more atrocious cruelty. The good news is that you can have bona fide, nutritious, delicious, cruelty-free eggs. It's both easier and more difficult than you might think. The reason it's more difficult is that you can't just go to the supermarket or even the health food store and pick up some free-range eggs. Yes, you can buy something shipped in a truck from California in a carton labeled free-range, but odds are you're not getting what you think you're buying. The truth is, any egg producer, including corporate factory farms, can label their eggs free-range, even if they keep chickens on a crowded concrete floor with a small, barely visible door leading to an outdoor enclosure too small for all but a few of the chickens at a time. Unless you see the operation with your own eyes, you simply don't know what's going on. And the most likely scenario is the one I've just described. In 2005, animal rights groups from 16 states pressured the Better Business Bureau and Federal Trade Commission to consider false advertising charges against United Egg Producers for their misleading Animal Care Certified label. The animal rights group's complaint was that most consumers believed that the label meant that there were some kind of humane treatment standards applied to the hens laying those eggs. Some people even convinced themselves they were free-range and hand-slaughtered. Some believed they were put out to pasture when no longer laying eggs, when in truth, they lived out their entire lives in the industry-standard male slots, slaughtered as soon as laying slowed, and slaughtered in assembly line machines that shackled and hung conscious birds upside down, cut them with mechanical blades that often mauled instead of killed them, before drowning the suffering birds in tanks of scalding water. The lawsuits were dropped when the industry agreed to change the labels to United Egg Producers Certified and agreed to pay $100,000 to states for attorney's fees and consumer education. The consumer education money was used to make people more aware of what really goes on in factory farms. But the misleading free-range label and misplaced faith in its accuracy still persist. I'm not saying it's impossible to buy cruelty-free organic eggs. If you know where to find true free-range eggs, I encourage you to support that person. I was a vegan for several years and only started eating eggs after I started chickening. I adopted chicks from a backyard chickener who had more than she could handle because I wanted a way to eliminate earwigs from my organic garden. The eggs were originally just a side benefit, but I quickly became addicted. And I have to admit that once or twice, when my chickens weren't laying, I bought some eggs from a small farm I trusted, but I wouldn't even tell my closest friends who that was, because eggs like that are hard to find and sell out fast. The good news is that if you do like I say and have chickens in your backyard, you'll be able to just look out your window and see your hens and know exactly how they're doing, and you'll know what you're feeding them. I'm Bucky Bacall, and I had a good time. Bucky Bacall's Backyard Chicken Broadcast was produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with support from Boise Community Radio and the Green Institute.
And that was Bucky Bacall in his segment titled, Not All Eggs Are Created Equal. You're tuned in to Deconstructing Dinner, and in this next Bucky Bacaw segment, he explores in greater depth the egg benefits of backyard chickens. In particular, Bucky lays out the importance of calcium in the diet of any egg layer, and examines the egg-laying cycle, of which most North Americans, having become so disconnected from our food source, would likely be unaware of.
Bucky Bacaw here with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. On a previous episode, I discussed the merits of the eggs laid by backyard chickens as compared to eggs laid in factory farms. To sum up, grocery store eggs are noxious and backyard eggs are glorious. Of course, eggs are only one reason, not even the most compelling reason, to sign on to the Bucky Bacaw agenda of a chicken or three in every backyard, rural, urban, or suburban, worldwide. The truth is, having backyard chickens empowers us chickeners and frees us from the oppressive yoke of corporate food production, because chickens supercharge your garden by providing pesticide-free bug control, excellent tilling, compost management, and fertilizer production, in addition to providing companionship and entertainment. There really is no sensible argument against living with chickens, but because the human connection to agriculture has been all but severed by corporate takeover, most people I meet tell me, "Bucky, I'd love to have chickens in my outdoor space, but I'm a city person. I don't know the first thing about egg production." The truth is, you don't have to know much, because the chicken knows egg production, and all you gotta do is provide the basics, food and shelter. I've covered those topics on previous episodes, and will again, but for web links on nutrition, coop building, legal questions, and other nitty-gritties, visit the Bucky page at sagebrushvariety.org. First thing I need to clear up is that a hen doesn't need a rooster to lay eggs. Roosters are needed to fertilize eggs in order for them to hatch into chicks, but a chicken goes through its reproductive cycle, including producing eggs, regardless of reproductive activity, just like other animals, including humans. Some of you are saying, "Duh," but I promise you that some, even many of your fellow listeners, are saying, "No kidding." Not only is it a surprisingly common contemporary confusion, but the ancient Greeks were also a little bit hazy on the question. I've come across some conflicting information, but all my sources agree that the ancient Greeks believed the wind could fertilize an egg. The Greeks believed a chicken egg that wasn't sired by a rooster must have been fathered by the wind, known as Zephyr eggs. Aristotle, the top thinker at the time, believed that all eggs, of any species, were the products of the male seed growing in the womb. The only way to explain the immaculately conceived egg of a virgin, or spinster, was that hens who sniff at the wind in spring had absorbed the wind's seed. Others believed the wind blew its seed up from the other end. The notion that the sole contribution of the species of any female to birth was the womb was a misconception that persisted in male-dominated scientific circles for thousands of years. I have to wonder if regular folks who raise chickens, including, no doubt, many women, shared this notion. Other sources refer to Zephyr eggs as eggs laid with no shell. That's a fairly recent development. A shellless, or thin-shelled egg is actually the result of calcium deficiency in the hen, which is just one reason why you need to make sure your flock gets fed right, especially because an ongoing calcium deficiency will not only affect the eggs of a laying hen, but will eventually result in bone degeneration and a dramatic decline in health. As far as calcium is concerned, hens can get calcium from the bugs they eat in a healthy backyard, as well as from a number of vegetable sources. Beet greens, cilantro, chard, kale, and lettuce are examples of inexpensive calcium sources the Bacaw flock enjoys. However, most laying flocks will require supplemental calcium. The shells of their own eggs is one source. Just make sure you grind or chop them up before putting them out with feed. Otherwise, they may associate the sight of an egg with food and begin to eat their own eggs before you get a chance. Another common supplement for small flock birders is ground up oyster shells. I've done a detailed show on nutrition, and you can check the web links on the Bucky page of sagebrushvariety.org for more information. Back to what you can expect from a laying hen. The textbook laying pattern is an egg every 25 hours, starting in the morning on the first day and getting progressively later until it gets into the evening hours. A hen won't lay an egg in the evening, so they won't start again until the next morning when the cycle begins anew. At some point, a hen, or the hen's inner biological voice, will decide it's time to try to hatch some chicks. That's known as a broody hen. Other birds get broody when conditions are ideal to successfully hatch and raise as many chicks as possible. Normally, that has to do with season, or by the number of eggs, or clutch, that are on the nest. Chicken broodiness is less clearly tied to survival imperatives, and much more tied to breeding. Certain breeds, such as silkies, are very broody. An individual silky may lay an egg and immediately go into hatch mode. They are known to take a liking to an elegant rock or other objects vaguely resembling an egg, and trying to hatch that, even male silkies get broody. Polish hens, on the other hand, may live out their entire lives without ever attempting to hatch a chick. A broody hen will stop laying eggs. They're less likely to get broody if you regularly remove the eggs from their nest. Egg laying ceases during the 2 to 3 months of winter, when the daylight hours are shortest, unless you do like some commercial hatcheries and keep chickens in a lighted barn. If you ask me, constant artificial light is a mild form of torture. How would you like it? Indeed, I believe it's one of the techniques used at Guantanamo Bay. It would be nice to have eggs year-round, but I also want my chickens to be happy. I figured recently that my 3 young chickens produce a yearly average of 1.5 eggs a day. That's a pretty steady diet of eggs, and I'm satisfied. Another thing that will affect egg-laying is molting, the chicken version of shedding. This usually happens in summer or fall, but varies by climate, from breed to breed, and even from bird to bird. Some chickens molt gradually, and you may not even notice, but often it's a dramatic and temporarily ugly process. Molting hens' energies are usually diverted into feather replacement and maintaining the right body temperature, so don't be surprised if egg production slows or halts temporarily. And once again, make sure you provide nutritious, balanced, and interesting diet to support your hens through their draining reproductive cycles. Chickens will lay eggs for many years. Some say most of their 10 to 15 year natural lifespan. In diminishing numbers, of course, but they still lay. A commercial hatchery will slaughter a hen who's past her prime because it starts to cut into their profit margin. But you have the option of keeping them around for bug control, fertilizer production, companionship, or to discipline any new chickens that may get added to your flock, in addition to a few eggs now and then. This is Bucky Bacall, signing off. I had a good time.
And you're tuned in to Deconstructing Dinner. Again, if you miss any of today's broadcast, it will be archived on our website at deconstructingdinner.ca. And there you'll find previous Bucky Bacall segments as part of this Backyard Chickens series here on the show. Now, I do have one more segment from Bucky on this topic of backyard egg production. You can also stay tuned for an interesting segment of audio that will round off today's show, an educational recording from 1960 that outlines some of the sounds that chickens make when communicating with their young. But first, here once again is Bucky Bacall speaking on the topic of nests and nest eggs.
But before I move on to other backyard chicken subjects, I'm going to discuss the topic that was most important to me when I started out as a chicken enthusiast. How to be sure you're being kind to your egg-laying hens. A nice gesture is to provide your hens with a nest box, any chicken-sized box with a little bedding in it, placed in a secure spot in the chicken coop, or somewhere that's not too much trouble to get to, but where they also feel safe from predators while they're trying to lay. Realize still, a lot of chickens will pick their own spot. My chickens have approved of my nests from time to time, but they've also made nests in a half-empty plastic bag of shredded pine chips I left near the kitchen door, a cat carrier with its door broken off, which stray cats were using as a night hotel, and atop an old washing machine I didn't take to the dump right away. And whether they choose your suggested nest or a more creative option, some or all of them will pick the same nest. And there's going to be some argumentative clucking going on. Let them work that out. The soft-hearted beginner, like me when I adopted my first chicks, may worry whether it will upset the chickens when we take their eggs. My experience, and what I've heard from other chickeners, is that most hens don't usually seem to miss their eggs, with some variation according to breed and individual personality. A typical hen will leave her nest soon after she finishes laying an egg. Some make a victory call that sounds almost like a rooster crowing. and then go about her other hen business, without seeming to think about it again, and never noticing when it disappears. However, some chickens will poke around looking for their egg, making a fuss, and some will keep on starting new nests in an apparent effort to fool you. A common way of sparing a hen like that anxiety and keeping them from re-nesting is to use a nest egg. Nowadays, we think of a nest egg as a little bit of money tucked away, kind of like a retirement fund. But the term originated with the practice of putting a round egg-sized stone or piece of carved wood or other material in the nest to fool an egg-protective hen. Kind of like the way these new deferred tax thingamajiggies are supposed to make you feel okay about the government taking away your Social Security. The first time a chicken laid an egg in my backyard, earlier than I'd expected her to, I hopped on my bicycle and raced to the nearest knick-knack store to find a believable substitute. The only thing I could find was an alabaster egg that was at least three times the size of a so-called jumbo egg. I feared she wouldn't accept it, but she adored that alabaster egg. Absolutely could care less about her own eggs, but if for any reason her alabaster egg went missing, she'd search the yard, complaining bitterly. Eventually, we got even more chickens, and it turns out every one of them loves the big alabaster egg. One of our flock is a Seabrat, one of the three smallest breeds of all time, and can barely fit over it, yet they all compete over the nest with the alabaster egg. I've attempted to find other substitutes, so they won't fight over that one, but every plastic, wood, or rock I've tried has been met with utter disdain. Ever so often, a hen's hormones will kick in to a degree that compels her to try to hatch as many eggs as she is sitting on at the time. That's what's called a broody hen. Broody hens are more likely to get upset if you remove the egg or eggs they're trying to hatch. Some breeds or individuals never get broody, and some are broodier than others. But from what I've seen and heard, the nest egg continues to be an acceptable substitute, at least psychologically. All three of my hens have attempted to hatch the emu-sized alabaster egg. Obviously, a chicken doesn't know that not only an egg fertilized by a rooster will ever hatch. When a chicken is trying to hatch an egg, they stay on that egg almost constantly. Every day at some point, they'll get up to stretch, eat a whole bunch of grain, drink a lot of water, and make a really large poop. Then they settle back in on their nest. Eventually, they'll give up on an egg, go back to their normal routine, and start laying again after about a week. One of the hens in the bacaw flock makes me worry she's going to starve herself. After a while, I remove her fake egg, and after a day or two, she goes back to her normal routine. This does seem to cause her a day or two of distress, but it saves her from starving herself. And in the end, I can tell she's relieved to have the whole chemical imbalance of broodiness over and done with. One of my favorite topics is the many ways chickens know how to communicate with each other, with other critters, and with humans. You don't need to be a hen whisperer to tell the difference between a stressed-out chicken and a happy chicken. I'm certain the flock in my yard has less stress in their lives than the vast majority of domesticated or wild animals I've ever met, humans included. I do my part to help them live a stress-free life, but it helps that their needs are so straightforward. In return, they've helped feed me and improved my outlook. I'll discuss this in detail on a future show. For the Backyard Chicken Broadcast, I'm Bucky Bacall. I had a good time. Bucky Bacall's Backyard Chicken Broadcast was produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with support from Boise Community Radio and the Green Institute.
You can expect more from Bucky Bacall and his Backyard Chicken Broadcast on future episodes of Deconstructing Dinner. And to close out today's part three of our Backyard Chickens series, I've unearthed here an interesting recording from 1960 titled Animal Sounds and Communication. The recording was sponsored by the Office of Naval Research in the United States under the auspices of the American Institute of Biological Science. The recording introduces just some of the sounds that any backyard chickener would likely get accustomed to when raising chickens and perhaps baby chicks.
The following sounds of chickens were recorded by Nicholas Collius.
Everyone has heard the crowing of a rooster telling the world that he is cock of the walk, but many people do not know that chickens have many other vocalizations that have special meanings. We would like to play some of these sounds, and as we play each one, describe the meaning which we believe each sound or signal has for other chickens. When a baby chick is lost, cold, or hungry, it gives distress calls. When the baby chick is returned to its companions or to the warm incubator from the cold or is given food, it gives pleasure or contentment notes. These notes, unlike the distress calls, sound quite pleasant to the human ear. Another group of sound signals are made by mother hens to attract their chicks. As a broody hen walks along, she keeps clucking. And to the chicks, this clucking means, "Follow me." When a mother hen discovers some grain or other food, she scratches and pecks at the food and calls her chicks with excited food calls, and the chicks come running from all directions. At nightfall, the mother hen finds and settles down in a good place where she wishes to spend the night and calls her chicks to come and be brooded, using a special roosting call that to our ear sounds like the purring of a contented cat. Chickens have various notes to express different degrees and kinds of danger. One of these warnings signifies a ground predator, such as an approaching dog or man. When a hawk flies into the chicken yard, the adult chickens each give a loud scream, and this hawk warning causes the chicks to run and hide at once, under or next to any nearby object. Of danger is not nearby or is moderate, such as a man moving some distance away, the birds may merely give less disturbed calls. Thus, these alerting notes by a broody hen merely cause her chicks to freeze into an attitude of tense alertness. When a chicken is caught by a predator, for example, as when a hen is held in the hand by a man, the bird gives loud, fear squawks. Two bark each other, keep up a low growling or grumbling as each tries to find an opening. These threat notes signify readiness to attack another bird. In conclusion, these various recorded sounds suggest that just as man has his own special language, so chickens have their own special means of vocal communication, which helps them to solve their own living problems.
That was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded at Nelson, British Columbia's Kootenai Co-op Radio. I've been your host, John Steinman. I thank my technical assistant, John Ryan. The theme music for Deconstructing Dinner is courtesy of Nelson area resident Adam Shake. This radio program is provided free of charge to campus community radio stations across the country and relies on the financial support from you, the listener. Support for the program can be donated through our website at deconstructingdinner.ca or by dialing 250-352-9600.